there is a land. A place in space-time, light years away. Where the best in progressive music of all types, rock, metal, electronic, and more, come together. It's time for you to take a journey to that magical realm where galaxies collide, the strangest of creatures lurk and slither, and rituals are enacted to bring about the dawning of a new age.
I think I speak for everyone here when I say, stop it! This is Progtopia, episode 137. And warm greetings to all of you in the land of Progtopia. Welcome to the program that features interviews, reviews, and discussions about both well-known and up-and-coming acts in Prague, a term we sometimes define loosely and proudly so. My name is Mark Ashby, and I'm the host of the show. Join us now for a trip through the wires, and hopefully you'll come out the other side ready to subscribe to the program and follow it on Facebook and Twitter. Visit progtopia.com for past episodes and hear what you may have missed. For now, though, we press onward. Okay, so I'm not going to lie. Real life has been a real challenge lately. Not in a bad way, just in a busy way. So I have been away from the podcasting realm for a few weeks to tidy up various other issues related to both work and pleasure. But now I'm back. And because I've only found the time to make one segment for this episode, that being the usual interview, so at least it's that, we're going to do this one old-school Progtopia style and devote the entire show to Shineback. That is the brainchild of Simon Godfrey, whose newest album, Dial, is just out on Bad Elephant Music. And, yeah, that label name should be familiar to many of you who are regular listeners to the program. As evil label boss and prime pachyderm himself, David Elliott is frequently heard on this program too, on his own and as part of the Never Seeming to Find the Time to All Get Together Prog Squad group. At any rate, with Shineback's first album, Rise Up Forgotten, Return Destroyed, also being BEM's very first release 5 years ago now, I thought it might be an opportune moment to interview both Simon and David simultaneously on one Skype call that occasionally had some very interesting dropouts, but I think I got rid of most of them. But I wanted them to reflect on their years of partnership and the friendship that preceded it, the multi-guest approach Simon takes with Shineback releases, what the significance is behind the similarities in artwork on the two full Shineback albums to date, and a whole lot more. Both these gentlemen are quite entertaining and witty, believe it or not, as much as I like to give David a hard time at least, but I hope that will all come across in the interview that follows, and you'll hear some old and new music in the meantime. That's all right now. So join me, won't you please? I started off by asking Simon, since he has many other projects he's a part of, what's the idea behind Shineback? Why does he need yet another musical outlet under a different name?
It started off really as a project, and this is going to sound a bit egotistical, but it's the one thing that no one says no to me about, really. It's the whole point of it was to go into areas which didn't necessarily interest some of the other musicians that I'd been working with over the years, and try something a little bit different. And so in some respects it's a solo project, but it is collaborative in the fact that once I've written the songs, what I do is I actually throw these songs out to people that I really like and admire as musicians, and ask them to see whether or not they contribute something a little bit more that maybe I might not necessarily have thought about in advance. So all of the guests that I get in on the Shineback projects, they're the surprise element. They're the bits that I'm not anticipating. And that's the fun bit, really, for me with Shineback.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that I notice, you know, knowing your music for a while here. It seems like you're one of those musicians who really draws that energy and creativity from this kind of wide collaboration. You know, you don't just stick with one or two guests. You really get a lot of people on these albums. So
yeah, I don't like to be in one place at any one time. I think that goes back to the days when I was a bank robber. You need to move about and be all quick on your feet. No, in all seriousness, I genuinely think it's because I think every artist, especially if you're a songwriter, the one thing that you look out for most as a writer is the ability to confound your own expectations. And the use of guest artists on the Shineback project is a way of doing that in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, now that we have you here as well, we're doing a little dual interview here, a real musician and a failed musician, two failed musicians, I'll include myself
in
that.
failed spectacularly. I mean, you're right, I am a failed musician.
Made more money on it than I did, that's for sure. So, David, can you take us back to the early days of the Shineback Bad Elephant Music connection? How this all happened? Because this is sort of where it all started.
And it just sort of all came together in a pub in Clapham, didn't it?
Yes, it did. What was the name of that pub?
I can't remember. It was
something like Victoria or the Beatrice or something.
Was it the one where some point before you and Ramsey got me completely hammered?
That's the one, yes.
Yeah, but on this occasion there was a drink involved, and that was when the sort of the idea was born. So yeah, I mean it was a friendship, but also it was great because when I started Ballad for Music, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. It was nice to work with someone who I had a friendship with. But in a sense, in a way, it kind of sort of it's set the template for what Bad Elephant Music is about, because although we're often called a prog label or a progressive music label, Shineback kind of sort of doesn't really have very easy categorization. You can't sort of put it into a single box. It kind of sort of set the template for that. And that's really nice because we're starting off by doing something very different and continuing to do something very different as we go along, and other stuff going in. So yeah, it's that really. And Simon and I have worked together on some of the projects since with the label, the solo stuff, the digital releases, and Valdez, of course, the band he plays in, and it's just always been really good fun to work with Simon because he's a mate and because he's got quite a high tolerance for when things go badly wrong.
That's what you hope for from your friends, I suppose.
So. Yes, I've had my fair share of cock-ups in my time, musical and, friendship-wise as well. I just think for me, one of the things which I always think that sets Bad Elephant BEM apart is the whole idea that anything goes, really, as long as there's something interesting there. One of the things that David is very, very upfront with all of the artists that approach him, and to be really honest with you, nowadays, David does get a lot of people coming up and saying, like, I have this album. But unlike so many other executives, David doesn't blow smoke up your arse and try and sort of like make you feel important. He sort of says, look, this is a label that is there to give people a voice who don't necessarily or might not necessarily have a chance to have a voice, musical voice out there in the music. This is one of the things which keeps me coming back time after time to release projects through BEM, is that the bullshit level is very, very low with BEM. And that's a rare thing in these modern times.
I suppose you've dealt with
you
that on the. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure every musician has that, those stories of having to deal with, whether it's a label or a promoter or whatever it is. So I guess that's the secret to a successful artist label partnership, is just let me do my thing and you do your thing and we'll stay on our own sides of the
of the
pretty much
the yeah. partnership here. I was going to say fence, but that implies a division. There's not a division. It's
no.
that kind of thing.
I hope not.
Yeah. So I mean, that's it. Just seems like it's nice to hear that friends can work together, because sometimes they say, you know, the last person you want to enter into a business or this sort of a relationship with is a friend, but it seems like it's working out for you guys. I mean, nobody's threatened to, you know, hack a limb off of the other one yet.
So. You haven't heard all the conversations.
Well, I'm clearly, you know, I don't need to be privy to everything. It's all right.
No, I mean, it has worked very well. And part of that is that Simon he's more to Bad Elephant than than an artist on the label. He's helped out with a lot of other stuff behind the scenes. For instance, he looks after our YouTube presence, and that's not just for the projects that he works in, but everything. So you know, he's one of the guys who's part of it. I've always said that Bad Elephant Music is a family, and the artists and musicians who work with us are members of that family. Mm-hmm. And often get involved, but you know, because Simon's the guy who I go back furthest with the exception of Roger Patterson, but then there was a 20-year gap between between us sort of last week together the first time and then getting together to do the Twice Bitten CD a couple of 3 years back. Simon's the guy who I've had the sort of the longest association with, really, him and Rob Ramsey. Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting you say that, because one of the things that I have really noticed about BEM, if you look at all the artists on BEM, there is a common mindset amongst all of the artists. Like, you wouldn't really imagine a world that would encompass somewhere like My Trixie Spirit, which is an album which has come out through BEM, and also a band like... The Gift as well, mm-hmm. who are very different beasts, but they all have a very similar mindset in that whole idea of anything goes. We just want to go off in the direction we want to go. And David is very good at corralling all of the artists that he wants on the label. And it is really a decision that largely rests with David in some ways, in a very similar way to the Island label. Was very much a brainchild of what was his name? Was it Chris
Blackwell?
Chris Blackwell, and the same with the 4AD label. I see a lot of similarity between those two labels and BEM in the fact that you're not a progressive rock act, or you're not a hard rock, or you're not a world music act. If you're on BEM, you are a BEM act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Hey,
yeah, genre fluid.
I want to return briefly, now that we've had all this, you know, self-congratulatory rot out of the way.
You're such a tosser, Mark. You really are.
We could go back to the actual music of this. And I want to just briefly go back for people who might not be familiar with that debut album, the first BEM album, Rise Up, Forgotten, Return, Destroyed. Simon, there's a concept in there, and I love my concept album. So if you could you tell anyone who maybe isn't familiar with that album what's going on there?
Sure. Basically, the whole idea behind the first album, it actually stretches back to my previous band, was Tiny Fish. We released an album called The Big Red Spark, which had a story running through it. Mm. And when it came for me to do the first Shineback album, I really wasn't fully finished with that format, that story format, and I wanted to you know, inhabit a world again that followed one person. And the whole thing behind Rise Up Forgotten, it's about a woman called Dora, who, funnily enough, I named my greyhound after, which has kind of sort of stolen a little bit of the Dark Thunder out of it when you've got a greyhound name.
Mind you, after all the misery on the album, you really needed to do that.
It's true, yes. And the story follows this lady called Dora, who, by dint of story, because you can do this with story, takes a video camera into her dreams and video vlogs, basically, from her dream world. And there she meets a whole load of these strange, fantastic creatures, because once you're in a dream world, you can let your imagination run wild with everything. And she meets some very interesting characters from her past and from her subconscious, and they all come together in one large crisis, which has a rather dark ending. I won't try and give the story away, but she meets members of her family from her past, and when she re-enters what she thinks is the waking world, things go to pieces very quickly, shall we say. And it all ends up on a slightly somber note, where she is she's living out the last of her days in a sort of like a sort of hospital for the mentally unwell, shall we say. Mm-hmm. But at the very end, there's a slight glimmer of redemption as she breathes her last right at the very end of the album, and I was very happy with that, because effectively, with those two albums, The Big Red Spark and Rise Up Forgotten, Return Destroyed, to sort of play out that story part of me in music. And I think I did it slightly more successfully with the Shineback one than I did with The Big Red Spark, but both of them I'm very proud of.
We'll get you back to the interview shortly, but first, if you haven't already experienced the eclectic electric joy of Shineback yet, maybe I'll get you started with this track near the opening of the debut album, Rise Up Forgotten, Return Destroyed. Here's a track that asks the question, is this the dream?
The dream.
I'm wondering, is there any sort of through line or idea in Dial, the new album? Is there anything that you're trying to capture, you know, conceptually, lyrically there?
There's a very loose theme, in the same way that I always remember Alex Lifeson talking about Power Windows, and where there was no real one story running through that Rush album. There was a theme which linked all the songs, and it's the same with Dial. The whole idea behind Dial is it's a whole load of songs themed around the idea of miscommunication, or how poorly sometimes we as human beings communicate with one another, often when we absolutely need to communicate clearly at the, you know, the most. And so I ran with this concept, and I put together these songs, which all had elements of that sense of miscommunication, that sense of Chinese whispers, the getting the message wrong, or two paths, you know, crossing inches away from one another in the middle of the night and never knowing that you were in the presence of someone else. So that's the theme about it. It gave me a little bit of a broader spectrum to write this time round.
Right. Okay. So, David, let me get back to you. I know you're something, at least with other artists on BEM, you're something of a, let's call you a kindly whipcracker, but maybe not so kindly after a while when it comes to getting music released. I mean, I don't know if it's done in jest at all. It seems like somewhat, but maybe some of it is based in reality. But how does Simon stack up as far as meeting deadlines that are set?
Oh, he's fine as long as he gets to set the deadlines.
Oh, okay.
it's fine. We know each other well enough that we can negotiate deadlines, and I've got quite good at sort of spotting when, say, you know, someone may be genuinely in difficulty, because the way that I do this is I'd rather get it good than get it quick. Except where Tom Slatter's concerned, in which case I'd just rather get it at all. This album, Dial, has been in development for quite some time. And a few bits and pieces have sort of happened to Simon along the way, like emigrating, and all sorts of other things. And yeah, when that sort of stuff happens, obviously you've got to sort of take stock and concentrate on other things for a while. So we were having conversations throughout. We were both pretty well agreed that, you know, Simon said, yeah, I can stick to that particular sort of timescale, and we slotted it in to fit around there. We were determined with this one. We wanted to do it this year because it's the fifth anniversary of the label. It would have been nice to have done it in July, but there were scheduling reasons why we couldn't. The reason it would have been nice to do it in July was because it was July 2013 that the first album was released, but there were scheduling reasons that we couldn't actually do that. But this is pretty close.
I was able to get one track out on our birthday, yes. Wasn't I?
Yeah, you did a special for us for the birthday, We Rescue, which is a really nice song, actually. When you played to Dan Zambas, he just goes, "That's filth, man, that's filth." Because of the really sort of dirty synth. Dirty
sounds like him, yeah.
Synth sound at the start of it. Yeah, but it's fine. With other artists, actually, for the most part, again, it works pretty well. Some have got, you know, fantastic work ethic. Others, and actually, Tom, I take the mickey out of Tom remorselessly, but he's pretty good on delivery. But there are others who sometimes need a little bit of
controlling.
Yes, a little bit of brutality, well focused. It's quite good. I threaten to send Martin around. That usually sorts it out.
So we mentioned guest artists that you collaborate with. Who do you have on Dial this time? I heard a few of the names already, like Dan Zambas and all that, but who else is in there?
Well, we have a real smorgasbord of talent. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get Claire back this time, but we've got some of the old Rise Up Forgotten alumni. We've got Matthew Stevens, who was on the original. We've got Deck Burke and Hal Bennett, who all appeared on the original, along with Henry Rogers, who played on the title track last time, and he's now playing on the open track, Lies and Consequences. We also have some new people along for the ride. We have Ray Weston, the singer of Echolin, who sings on one of the tracks called Let Her Sleep. We have a very talented gentleman called Carl Eisenhart, who's in a band called Pinnacle, who's literally just up the road from me in up near Reading in Pennsylvania. We have a few other sort of guests along the way. We have, I'm just trying to think of them all now, because we did actually have a larger contingent of them this time round, and I really don't want to forget their names.
Slatter's on it.
Oh, yeah, yes, Tom Slatter.
He got to put Slatter in there. Yes, he sometimes exactly. Listens to this show, so.
Oh, well, there we are. Well, so he was fabulous, because we had a track called Here I Am, which my longtime co-writer Rob Ramsey has a spoken word performance on, and I really wanted something dark and bizarre. So Tom is both. So I thought he was a perfect candidate for this. And we had a couple of other guests. Am I missed anyone out?
You've missed out your two bandmates, Simon.
Oh, of course, yeah. And of course, how could I forget both Tom Hyatt, who's also in Eklund, and Joe Cardillo, who are both in Valdez with me. And they played on a track called I Love You From Memory. And I have to say, both of their performances, they really make the track for me.
Yeah,
I like that track a lot. Yeah, I really do.
Yeah, they do some. I mean, you know, if ever you want to sort of like hear Tom at his most sort of like melodic as a bass player, that track's an astonishing track. And he's got this great big hulking electric double bass, which he uses with Valdez, and he employed that to all of those big boomy low notes, and not a Taurus pedal or any synths. That's actually his bass being bowed.
Brilliant.
So it's a great sort of like big low rounded orchestral boom at the bottom end, which I think is fantastic. And Joe Cardillo just brings it home with this sort of like Tony Banks-esque Wind and Wuthering keyboard solo in the middle of it, which is just awesome.
Okay, they just mentioned it, so now we gotta play it. From the new album Dial, here's Shineback with I Love You From Memory.
I love you.
I must tell you a funny story. You mentioned the guests, because you mentioned that one that Ray's on. Let Us Sleep. When I got the masters back from the mixers back from Simon, I should say, and sent them off to Daniel Bowles, who does all of our mastering. And I sent them off to him. He said, "These are fine, but there's one song in here. I don't think it's from the same album." it's which one? He said, "No, it's Let Her Sleep." That's not Simon. That's not Simon. No, it's not Simon Daniel. It's somebody else. Oh, okay. Very amusing.
Yeah. So
that's really been one of my main tenets is to try and pull in as many different sounds and influences as I possibly can. And I know in some respects that kind of might potentially lose me fans, because, you know, there are people out there that, you know, I know what I like and I like what I know. The bottom line for me is that I you know, very much of a sort of musical riddle spirit. And I like to try and hop those fences between genres as much as I possibly can. And really, the best way for doing that is getting other people in to help you do that fence hopping. And I think Ray just knocked it out of the park with that track.
Yeah, and I think it comes at exactly the right point in the album, and it doesn't sound out of place. It's consistent.
Well, did you get demos or anything, or did you just get the finished product, more or less?
I heard about half of the material in rough mix form. Mm-hmm. And actually, rough mixes from Simon are usually pretty advanced in the process. They're sort of fairly well developed. So I had a sort of a rough idea of what I was getting. And then as Simon was mixing, he was sending the final mixes back as he was getting them. So there wasn't a moment at which I heard the whole album for the first time, except in the sense that once everything had arrived back, I was able to order them in the order because the order for this one was actually decided after all the mixing had been completed. Simon did that in collaboration with Dan Zambas, who was involved in sort of the final stages of the production as a kind of sort of extra pair of ears. So you then hear it for the first time in order, and I do what I normally do, which is to pop it onto my media player and listen to it on headphones on my commute to work. So that's the first time I hear it, and from the first moment I heard it, I thought, this is brilliant. I absolutely love this, which is good, because we've already scheduled the release. I am a Simon Godfrey fanboy. There's no two ways about it. I've always liked Simon's songwriting, and I knew this album was a winner. I didn't have any concerns at all that he would turn in a record which would be really, really great, and it has actually turned out to be really great. I think it's a step up from the first album, which I really love. My reaction was positive all the way through. I've not heard anything. I didn't hear anything at any point which jarred with me.
I wanted to talk about the cover art for Dial and Rise Up, Forgotten, Return, Destroyed. There's some similarities there. I just want to know what the significance is of the design that's featured on both. It's just the coloration is a little different. So,
well, we work with a very talented artist called Brian Mitchell. And Brian was the guy that designed the first cover. And when we originally designed the first cover, we were being a little bit literal, I suppose is the best way to describe it. When I sort of like spoke to him, he said, "What are your thoughts behind this?" And I said, "Well, the song Rise Up, Forgotten, Return, Destroyed is probably going to be the title track on the album. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be the thing that the whole album hangs upon. Maybe you could use that as a sort of form of inspiration, because the whole idea is it's about the goodiness and the bad in us and how it's never one thing or the other. You know, I've never ever believed that people are totally evil or totally good. There's lots of different shades of grey in between all of that. And he basically ran with that and developed a motif which had the S logo for Shineback, but also as arrows, one pointing up and one pointing down. And it was a very strong image. And when we came round to Dial, we tried a couple of other designs, and they just weren't as potent, I suppose, is the best way to describe it, as that first album. It was it's something that when you see that S, you instantly know it's a Shinebeck album. And so the suggestion came, but why don't we pick up and run with the same design, but develop it in the same way that a musician develops the sound and music of a project or a band? And that really captured my imagination. I thought, this is an excellent idea. So we returned to that original design, and basically Brian looked at it again to see how he could develop it. And when I told him about the whole idea of miscommunication and that sense of garbled identity, I suppose, he came back with this whole feel of you know, the zeros and ones and the fingerprints that you see actually on the cover. And also, which I think is crucial, is the difference in color palette. And I think that's something which I might look again at if there's a third Shinebeck album, that we retain that and see as the albums go on whether or not we can develop it in the same way we would develop the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it always kind of, I think about cover art maybe more than most people do. I like the music, obviously, but then when I see something like that, I have to wonder about the choice of it. So thanks for the explanation.
Oh, no problem. I mean, the thing with regards to the EP, because we've got an EP out called Minotaur, which we released last year. Mm-hmm. I had in my mind that the EP would look nothing like the album cover, so as not to confuse it with an album by Shinebeck. Mm-hmm. And I have in my mind's eye that I when I first started that I would do three albums and two EPs, and then unless I've got a very good reason to continue on before that would be effectively it for Shinebeck, because I like the idea of having Shinebeck almost like a book or a film with a beginning and a middle and an end. And so as a result, the artwork does tie in a little bit with that sort of like that journey from start to finality.
Brian's a designer. That's his day job, is doing design for in the corporate world, and he loves doing the album stuff because it's a completely different thing to what he does at work, even though he's still, you know, messing around with Photoshop and being using the same skills and the same tools. And he's done loads of stuff for us, and His approach is very different to the approach that you would see taken by, say, someone like Mark Buckingham, who's also done quite a bit of stuff for us. Mark is more of an artist. He takes a sort of an art approach rather than a more design approach. I'm not suggesting for one minute that Brian's any less artistic in what he produces for us, and it's not as fabulous, because it is as fabulous. It's just a different approach to it. And I think it works really well with Shinebeck, and it's lovely to have had that consistency. I've really enjoyed that sort of coming through on the two records.
One more rather raw, emotional track from Dial now. Might be my favorite on the album for that reason. It's not that traditional, but I really like it. It's called Let Her Sleep.
Don't Don't you know my face, love? She's my one and only.
On that note, how can our listeners find out more about Shineback and get the new and older music, Simon?
Well, I would actually sort of say that it's probably best to hand it over to David there, because David is all things BEM, and he knows the golden gates which you have to pass through. And also, it's really important for me to say this, because, again, we talk going back to about BEM being a family. I love sort of like talking about Shineback, but I also love talking about a lot of the other artists on BEM, and I am only one artist of many on the label, so I would rather pass it across to David to close out the show on.
Sure, okay. Thank you, Simon. I mean, you go to our Bandcamp site, which is called music.badelephant.co.uk. All the albums are there. You can buy them either digitally as downloads, or you can buy CDs. You can have a listen to them all as well, all the way through, before you commit yourself to spending any money. And quite honestly, I'd rather you did that than go onto Spotify and do it. We do all that sort of stuff as well, but at least on Bandcamp, you're sort of having a listen to it, and then you might be tempted to press the buy now button afterwards straight away. But no, that's where all of Simon's stuff is there, in one convenient page on our site. You'll find Shineback. You'll find all his other stuff. Valdez has its own page, but the Black Bag Archives and all that sort of stuff. And I heartily recommend you give them a listen, because it's we'd rather people listened to the albums than not listen to them, even if they don't buy them. But I would actually rather they bought them.
Yes, we all would rather you bought them. I'm sure Simon does as well, because
Sure. Can I also just interject for 1 second? Because there is one element, there's one part of music which very rarely does get a shout out, which is the Black Bag Archives, which are a digital release only of basically all of the stuff that has never made it onto any of my main albums. So if you're remotely interested in what I do, and you would to explore a little bit more behind the scenes, so to speak, there are four volumes by the end of this year of materials which is of an unreleased nature, which is sitting out there. So if you were interested in that kind of sort of stuff, BEM provides you that as well.
All right. I'm going to miss those when they're done, because they're great fun.
Mm.
Did I say it would be really nice if people bought the albums?
I believe you did, so... of them in your collection will make you happier, I'm sure. So
it will. It will increase your general happiness, if not your wealth.
All right. So Simon Godfrey of Shineback is what we're talking about here, but so many other things. And our good friend David Elliott of Bad Elephant Music. I thought it would be kind of nice to have the two of you together, and you didn't disappoint. So at least not too much. at any rate. Simon was good to.
Thing anyone's ever said to me.
I know, yeah. Simon, it was good to get a chance to speak with you finally, and David, as always, wonderful to talk to you. So, all the best with the release and everything else that Bad Elephant's got going this year. And you know, Simon, everybody, check out all the many things Simon does. So, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Shineback, check it out wherever you get your music, people. But good music listeners know Bandcamp is best. And if you're in the mid-Atlantic area of the States, I believe Simon will be out and about occasionally with Valdez, one of his other projects, if you're inclined to catch up with his exploits in a live setting. Buy him a drink, maybe two. So, since that's all I have planned this time around, I'll close for now. But we are lining up some guests for October already, and there are some other segments in the works too, so stick around if you're new. I think you'll like what you hear. If you want to keep up with us in the meantime, follow Progtopia on Facebook or Twitter, and listen to all past episodes, including several BEM artists, at progtopia.com. Thanks again to Simon and David for what was a genuinely enjoyable chat. Not all of which you're hearing here, but, you know, can't pull back the curtain all the way. Progtopia's theme music is from the Salvation Song Suite by Galahad from their album Beyond the Realms of Euphoria, used with permission. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time in a land called Progtopia.